everybody, and welcome to Feeling Seen, the podcast that talks about the movies that make us feel seen. Today on the Feelings Pod, I have Renaissance Woman, I have a polymath on board. Maybe it was a formative television event for you when she played Lydia in the Lizzie Bennet Diaries. Maybe you're an Anne of Green Gables fan, like Kristen Meinzer, new friend of the pod. And maybe you've listened to her Anne Shirley radio plays, connecting back. Look at this. Anne Shirley, friend of the pod. And you might have also seen Mary-Kate Wiles' work with Shipwrecked Comedy. Or maybe you caught her as Vicky in the new Fairly Odd Parents, Fairly Odder. Mary-Kate Wiles, we've teed you up. Is there anything else that people need to know before we get started discussing with you today?
Oh my goodness. No, that was it. That was the best intro I've ever been given.
Holy cow. To respect the work.
I really appreciate it. You make me sound very cool. Thank you. I think some of us creatives suffer from a kind of like, oh, is this really worth noting? Oh, this thing, I don't know. You know what I mean? So it's nice. It's nice to hear somebody list off all your accomplishments in such an exciting way.
I come from a journalism background. I was a staffer at publications for a couple publications for over like about 15 years total. And mm-hmm. I feel like it's such a practice of writers to like degrade their own work. And I feel like you don't see it as much anymore, but there was definitely a season on social media where I wrote a thing was how anybody advertised anything they made. And it always made my skin crawl. It's so minimizing of all the work that it takes to put out something that is like of quality, that is crafted, that is thorough.
Yeah,
and considered.
I don't know what it is about us as creatives that, like, not everybody, obviously, but there's some kind of ingrained, like, you can't think what you do is cool. And I've noticed it myself.
I was going to ask where you sit on that spectrum.
I feel like I generally am a person with a fair amount of self-confidence.
Great.
But I am not good at, like, expressing that self-confidence, I guess. So, like, it's clearly a learned behavior where, like, internally I feel generally, like, I can do stuff and proud of the stuff that I do.
Good.
But, like, you know, when we used to go to parties and people would be like, what are you up to? I'm always like, oh, nothing. You know?
You're, and it's like, before you got to that party, you were like juggling 18 plates and they're like, oh, nothing.
Yeah. And I see, like, I do. And then I go, why did I say that? Like, I actually am doing stuff. I don't know what it is that, like, keeps us from wanting to, like, not even like gloat, but just be okay being like, oh, I did a cool thing.
Here's what I did at work today. Like, I'm just gonna talk about what I did at work today.
Yeah, exactly.
I tend to start off on tangents because let's settle in. Let's relax.
I love it.
But tell us, what is the movie and the character that you have brought for us to discuss today on the podcast?
Well, first of all, I thought this was such an interesting, I didn't know of the podcast before, and I thought this was such an interesting.
We're looking to make new converts all the time. Yes.
I love it.
Yes.
I think it's such an interesting premise for a podcast, and it really made me think a little bit because, like, obviously you are often asked what your favorite movies are.
Yes.
Lord of the Rings, Pride and Prejudice 2005.
There you go.
Tangled. But are those movies that I, like, specifically related to? Not necessarily.
Sure.
And I think that's interesting because obviously kind of a fun part about loving movies is, like, the escapism of it all. So it took me a minute, and then I came around to Lady Bird, Greta Gerwig's 2017 film, which I actually auditioned for.
Really?
Yeah, for a small part.
Okay.
But I was called back, and Greta was in the room.
Okay.
So that was cool. It did not get it. Did not book it. Spoiler alert. But I went to see this movie with my mom in the theater, and that was, like, it was such a very, like, momentous experience to see Lady Bird, movie about a young girl's relationship with her mother, with my mother, who I had not quite as contentious a relationship with, but, like, certainly I think I think probably most daughters with mothers can relate to some amount of that relationship.
Yeah,
so,
I think that's common.
And yeah, by the end of that movie, my mom and I were just weeping. And yeah, I loved it. And I rewatched it again last night in preparation for this. And it's such a great film. It really holds up.
And it's really like, so it's like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
You are.
Isn't that fun?
You're in and out and you're like, God, what a complete little picture I just got.
I 100% thought the same thing when I turned it on last night. I was like, ooh, an hour and a half. Love it.
Yeah. I was like, you're kidding me. Like,
love to see a movie in that length of time.
Now, when you walked out of the theater, was there like any kind of like discourse between you and your mom where you were like, okay, so we're both in our feelings about this? Or were you both just like, good movie? Good movie.
I'm sure we did talk about it. I think my mom probably said something to the effect of like, oh, that mother is so horrible. I'm glad I'm never that horrible.
And you're like, listen, I'm not saying you're that, but I'm not saying you're not that either.
Can we please just talk about this tomorrow?
You can't look like a rag because that makes us look like rags. And you want to know the truth? Here's the truth. Some of your friends' fathers could employ your father and they're not going to do it if it looks like his family is trash. You understand?
Didn't you ever go to sleep without putting all your clothes away perfectly? Like, even once? And don't you wish your mom hadn't gotten angry?
My mother was an abusive alcoholic.
Although, to be fair, and not to toot my own horn, Lady Bird has certainly got some issues going on. And I think as a high schooler, I was a little more put together.
Sure.
I certainly was not rebelling to quite the extent that she is in that movie, which isn't to say that, like, I certainly had my moments of being, I'm sure, very annoying to my mom. So I think we both kind of had that experience of like, oh, well, at least we weren't that bad. But
taking respite in that.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think it's nice to, I don't know, have like such a tangible representation of the way that mothers and daughters argue. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's just me, but like just seeing their rapport in this movie, like they so often go from like the first scene of the movie,
yeah,
they're listening to this audiobook and like both crying and like both having this experience
sobbing together. Like a good, yes, shared experience. They're both in, yes, the same place in this audiobook together.
Yes. And then they immediately start fighting.
The only exciting thing about 2002 is that it's a palindrome.
Okay, fine. Well, yours is the worst life of all, so you win.
Oh, so now you're mad?
No, it's just you're being ridiculous because you have a great life.
I'm sorry, I'm not perfect.
No one's asking you to be perfect. Just consider it.
That feels so, me and my mom.
I had forgotten, like, because the scene of it is so seared in my mind because it's so good that it, like, I had remembered it for some reason coming even, like, halfway into the movie. Lady Bird, mm-hmm, throws herself out of a moving, yep, car. At the beginning of this movie.
It's like, so good.
I was like, they're like having their moment in the car, and I was like, wait, this isn't the same car scene, is it? This has to happen later. We don't meet Lady Bird with her throwing herself out of a moving vehicle and her mom, incredible.
And her mom just starts screaming.
Ah! Like, it is remarkable.
Just the way enough. That you work, or the way that you don't work, you're not even worth state tuition, Christine.
My name is Lady Bird.
Well, actually, it's not, and it's ridiculous.
Call me Lady Bird like
Christine.
You said you would.
You should just go to City College. You know, with your work ethic, just go to City College and then to jail and then back to City College, and then maybe you'd learn to pull yourself up and not expect everybody to do everything.
Yeah, what a wonderful setup of these characters. Like, so good. So good.
It really, like, I think it's one of my favorite gifts now of all time. Just the, yeah, sequence of Saoirse Ronan shaking her head, throwing herself out of a car, and then her
Laurie
mom
Metcalf
just,
going,
yeah, Laurie Metcalf just being amazing. And that truly is, like, you're right, it does set, and the first thing we see of them is laying on a bed face to face together, just napping.
Yeah.
They're,
yeah,
just, like, yeah, so, they're so close to each other. And I think,
yeah,
It had been a minute since I watched again, and it really did feel like it captured in a... We've seen many wonderful movies about, you know, parent-child, mother... Like, it's a staple of time. But, like, there really did feel like a rare kind of thing that this movie captured, of that it wasn't prevailingly acrimonious, but it also wasn't prevailingly saccharine. Like, it... The times when Lady Bird would be, like... yelling at her mom, pleading with her mom, being a little brat to her mom, that she was also, like, so apologetic for appearing, perhaps not appearing grateful enough. They're a working class family. They don't have a lot of money. I found a scene that really hit me this time when I was watching it is when her mom finds out, because Lady Bird is a graduating senior at, I think it's called Immaculate Heart, a Catholic school in Sacramento that her family cannot afford, but they want to give their children the best opportunities possible to get education. Her older brother Miguel went to Berkeley. She's going to this private Catholic school, and she just wants to get out of Sacramento. She's sort of emotionally too big for Sacramento. She thinks she's too boring. She wants to be more interesting, as she says at the start. I just want to live through something. And it's like, well, this is 2002, bitch. So, like, 20 years from now, have fun saying that again. And, but just, it's just this slice of life, a girl throughout the course of a school year in this conflict, most predominantly with her mother, and the love story, really, of her and her best friend, played by Beanie Feldstein. But this line is also so lovely. Incredible. And the scene that really got me a lot more this time is when her mom finds out she's been applying to, like, out-of-state schools that they absolutely cannot afford. And it's like a pact between her and her dad, played by Tracy Letts. Like, can you help me with applying to these schools to get out of here, but don't tell mom, please. If I don't get in, she never has to know. But, like, if I get in, we'll cross the bridge when we come to it. Her secret gets kind of outed on accident. And her mom fully ices her out. And watching the scene where it's right after Lady Bird has graduated high school, she's in her gown still, and she's just begging her mom to even fight with her. Her mom is not saying a word. She is betrayed. She's furious. And when she's... Saoirse Ronan is just... They're both so incredible in that scene, but Saoirse Ronan just, like, pleading and saying, I'm sorry I wanted more. I'm so sorry I wanted more. But not in a way that I feel like... When I typically feel like I experience a scene like this, the I'm sorry I wanted more comes with sort of like an acerbicness to it.
Yeah.
Look, I'm sorry I wanted more. Like, you know, the James Van Der Beek, I don't want your life moment. But this is just like
an so genuine,
agonizingly sincere. I am so sorry that me wanting this could make you feel like you're not enough and this life wasn't enough and that I'm ungrateful.
Yeah. Please. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to hurt you. I appreciate everything you've done for me. I'm ungrateful, and I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry I wanted more.
And that just wasted me watching it this time.
It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. Just you describing it makes me tear up.
Right?
I think, too, so much of me relating to this movie, I was... not exactly the same age as Lady Bird, but I was a little bit behind her. But I, too, was kind of in high school around the same time. I grew up in Arkansas.
Okay.
I absolutely related to the feeling of, like, get me out of here. Not that I don't, like, love where I'm from, but I also knew at that time that, like, performing was what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And there's just not a lot of that to do in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's better now, but... And I just had always lived in that place. And my mom was a single mom and worked very hard. And there was a lot of, like, I've worked so hard to give you all of this. And I wanted to go to Los Angeles. And I knew that, like, that's what I wanted to do. And she told me at one point that she was not going to let me do that. And I cried.
Okay. Yeah.
So, anyway, you can see what happened. It all worked out, and I got my way.
and I got my way. Well, and Lady Bird ending up in New York, and that moment where she gets what she wants, essentially, and she's had the very emotionally empty and yet loaded farewell with her mother at the airport, where her mother refuses to come into the airport.
Yeah.
And, you know, so she's in New York. She's brought all her things. She's in the city of her dreams. And we see her at a party and just starts talking to some guy because she's just trying to meet anybody. And she immediately asks him if he believes in God. And he's like, no. And she's, well, why? And he says, it's stupid. And there's like a sense of resentment in her sort of reflexively mm-hmm. where she's like, people will believe in like all kinds of like ridiculous things, but like, but they won't believe in God. Like, she's not necessarily religious herself, but she comes from this like Catholic yeah. school upbringing where you see her suddenly, like, her roots sort of immediately take hold in her. And he yeah. asks her, because she's been insisting the entire movie that she's Lady Bird, and, you know, the incredible exchange in the audition for the school play back in high school. Is that, you know, is Lady, is that your given name? Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. I gave it to myself.
Give it to me by me.
Yeah, given to me by me. Yes, it is my given name. And, but when asked, like, oh, what's your name? There's like a beat pause and she says, Christine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she asks where she's from. He initially doesn't hear Sacramento, so she changes it to San Francisco. But, like, mm-hmm. there's this immediate sense of being drawn back to home because she's suddenly so far from it. And then, of course, yeah. we end with the call to her mother. And with that, you know, adorable question, she was like, did you get emotional the first time you drove through Sacramento? And I was like, oh, my God!
I know it's making me cry just thinking about it.
Did you feel emotional the first time that you drove in Sacramento? I did, and I wanted to tell you, but we weren't really talking when it happened. All those Bens I've known my whole life, and stores, and the whole thing.
Ugh. It's so good. It just so perfectly encapsulates, yeah, just so much, at least that I felt mm-hmm. about being a young person growing up in a place that I, like, didn't really appreciate mm-hmm. and didn't really want to be in. And
how do you feel about that place now, like, with the distance from it?
Ugh, well.
Yeah, like, you don't have to have the, like, romantic drive back through town in your mind, but, like, what was your relationship with it as you came out and got to L.A. and did and are doing LA?
So much of how I feel about it now is peppered by politics.
Oh, which God, is, yeah.
You know, unfortunate.
Yeah,
That said, Fayetteville, Arkansas is where I'm from, and it's a pretty fun liberal hotspot okay. of Arkansas, which is obviously a conservative state. Fayetteville is trying its best to be like a little Portland or a little Austin. It's like very fun.
Okay, one of those kind of yeah.
And it's been that way ever since I've lived there. Like, oh, it's great. Always been that way. So it itself is great, and every time I have gone back, I'm like, if I had different ambitions in life, I could see myself living here. Mm-hmm. Like, if I didn't want to be doing what I'm doing, which I can not make a living doing in Arkansas,
yeah.
You know, then maybe I would live here. But yeah, I do think I look back on it quite fondly. I now have the added association of Arkansas yeah. with, like, a lot of political beliefs that I don't align with.
Yeah.
so that's, I guess, unfortunate that it's tainted by that. But as a place, it is a nice place.
Well, and so I think I was that really kind of started resonating with me when I was watching it is just those beloved, like, that's one of my favorite parts of high school movies is when you see the way people render the types of high mm-hmm. school kids mm-hmm. and sort of each individual filmmaker, writer, directors, and like, projection of what those archetypes are. And I wondered how you felt with, like, the sort of surrounding cast of characters around Lady Bird in her high school.
Oh,
compared to, like, your high school experience. Like, the Kyle, that, like, brooding Timothy Chalamet character. Danny, the closeted theater right. gay. And the pretty popular girl who's just yeah. like, no, I want to send my daughters to the high school. I love it here.
Uh-huh.
And who just, like, they are truly, like, content and pleased to be where they are.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I was in theater, mm-hmm. again, in high school. So, like, the similarities keep coming. And not in high school, but in college, I dated a guy that reminds me so much of Timothy Chalamet's character. So again,
every woman who dates men has at least one. It's the rule of the universe.
And I was like, oh, he's so cool and counterculture and smart. So yeah, so relate to that. I don't think I ever, like, had this moment of, like Lady Bird does, like, trying to fit in with the cool kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did to an extent. Like, I don't know. I think I was well-liked in high school. My friends and I were pretty Jesus-y, and we
were... Oh, okay. Were... I grew up in a very, very Christian town.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, me too. And but, like, my best friends from high school and I are all still very good friends. And, like, we had our own little group, and, like, we didn't really care what anybody thought about us. Mm-hmm. And, like, we... went to church and, like, youth group, and also, like, watched Lord of the Rings and dressed up as hobbits for, like, to school. So, like,
my best friend in high school was the most devout person I know, uh-huh. and still probably is. And she's a licensed pastor now, so is her husband.
Oh, nice.
And she, too, favorite movie ever, Lord of the Rings.
Oh,
the amount of times I spent watching, the amount of hours I spent watching Lord of the Rings with Christians. Incredible.
We love it.
Christians love it.
Love us some Tolkien. I actually wrote my college entrance essay about Tolkien and how much I love him. So,
well, it's clear why I like you. There's a lot of common ground between you and people I've been very close to in my life.
That's really fun. But anyway, to get back to, yes, I think Greta Gerwig did such a great job of, like, capturing all these various sort of high school personalities and it felt like a very authentic high school, early 2000s high school experience.
Now,
I think
a question I have for you is, in you know, mm-hmm. going back to your, since we've teed up the high school experience here,
mm-hmm.
what was when you were in high school, what was the sort of prevailing cultural cachet? Like, I feel very lucky when I went to high school. My high school was really into the performing arts when I was there.
Oh,
so
sure.
The very popular kids were theater and choir kids.
Interesting.
That was
not the case.
Yeah, okay, what was sort of like the hierarchical status where you were?
I mean, we were a pretty big sports school.
Okay.
However, we were also, I don't know, we had a little bit of everything, I guess. We were also a pretty big smarty, tardy school.
Okay.
We were, like, first in the state for AP scores. Mm-hmm. I was, like, co-president of the National Honor Society.
Hey.
Yeah. So, like, I took a lot of pride in, like, being, you know, a bookish kid.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a certain amount of cachet, I feel like, that came with that. Because a lot of the popular kids were also, like, doing pretty well in school.
Mm-hmm.
That said, yeah, I don't think choir and theater were cool. I always had, like, this not so secret dream of being homecoming queen because for some reason at my school, even though I think that's typically thought of as, like, a super popular, like, cheerleader sort of deal,
mm-hmm.
There was, like, a tradition of kind of crowning somebody that was just generally well known and, like, well liked as a good person as the homecoming queen, as, like,
oh, right.
As opposed to, like,
sort of like a miscongeniality sort of.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yes,
as opposed to, like, whoever was the most popular.
Yeah.
And my friends and I have four, my group of high school friends, there were five of us, I think we were all on the ballot, and I was like, yes, this is my moment. Like, I wanted this so bad for some reason. Like, who cares?
Hey, it's a fun idea.
But then my senior year, it was a cheerleader. It was Natalie Beach, and I was so bummed. I was so sad.
It's time for us to take a quick break, but we'll talk more Mary-Kate Wiles in a minute. And then later, I will have one quick thing before I go about my recent little trip to Comic-Con, where I got to talk to a bunch of incredible filmmakers about being the bold voices of contemporary horror. So stick around for a little SDCC chat at the end.
Hi, it's me, Dave Hill, from before. Here to tell you about my brand new show on Maximum Fun, the Dave Hill Good Time Hour, which combines my old Maximum Fun show, Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident, with my old radio show, The Goddamn Dave Hill Show, into one new futuristic program from the future. If you like delightful conversation with incredible guests, technical difficulties, and actual phone calls from real-life listeners, you've just hit a street called easy. I'm also joined by my incredible co-host, the boy criminal Chris Gersbeck. Say hi, Chris.
Hey, Dave. It's really great.
That's enough, Chris. And New Jersey chicken rancher, Dez. Say hi, Dez.
Hey, Dave.
The Dave Hill Good Time Hour. Brand new episodes every Friday on Maximum Fun.
Plus, the show's not even an hour. It's 90 minutes.
Take that, stupid rules.
We nailed it.
Hi, my name is Graham Clark, and I'm one half of the podcast Stop Podcasting Yourself, a show that we've recorded for many, many years. And at the moment, instead of being in person, we're recording remotely, and you wouldn't even notice. You don't even notice the lag.
That's right, Graham. And the great thing about this... Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay. And
okay, go ahead.
And you can listen to us every week on MaximumFun.org.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Your podcasts.
Welcome back to Feeling Seen. I'm joined by Mary Kate Wiles. We are talking about Lady Bird, a coming-of-age story about a high school senior and Greta Gerwig's debut as a solo director. Let us get back into it. Now, I talking about Lady Bird, we have to discuss the central friendship of the story. Julie and Lady Bird. Tell me about the resonance of the friendship love story.
Oh, they're so great. And this was the first time I think most people had seen Beanie. And what a joy she is. She's just wonderful. I just love watching her. And yes, I love their friendship. And I love the little journey that it goes on. And ultimately how Lady Bird, like, and I think that's what's so nice about this movie is that Lady Bird does some really stupid stuff.
Yes.
And she figures it out and she realizes it. And then she, you know, kind of apologizes. And yeah, it's great. I am thankful for the female friendships that I had in high school because, unlike Lady Bird, nobody was trying to date me in high school. So.
Yeah, this is one of those suspension of disbelief situations in a movie where Saoirse Ronan is telling you that, like, no one's interested in her. And you're like, okay, Saoirse Ronan, cool. Yeah.
The boys were not knocking down my door. Although, that said, one of the first guy, actually, is he my first kiss? Yeah. One of my first kiss, who I went to high school with, is absolutely gay. So, you know, can relate there as well.
Yep. I asked if there was a Danny or a Kyle in your life, so it appears there was a Danny.
Yeah.
And
I guess there was.
a grand theater community tradition. So did you have, like, there's one of, you know, this movie is so amazing with the moments, how many moments it gives you, like, oh, what a moment. And one of those what a moments is when it's Jules and Lady Bird laying back in the car listening to Crash by Dave Matthews Band. Did you have any rituals that were like those Crash things?
That's really cute. Okay, here we go. We're getting into it.
Yeah, so, we're getting into it.
I said I was Jesus-y. I only strictly listened to contemporary Christian punk rock, baby.
I mean, that was the heyday. That was the zenith of crossover Christian rock. The amount of times I listened to Switchfoot and had no fucking idea what their real deal was in high school. Yeah,
it's,
man.
So true.
Absolutely.
It's so true. I was a gigantic Reliant K fan.
I was going to say Reliant K. That was Sadie Huggins' dance, right?
Hell yeah. Honestly, they're great. Still they hold up. They're so good.
Yeah.
I have made friends with them is how much I am not kidding you.
Wow.
The guitarist John Schneck is like one of my buddies. That's how into them I was. I would go see them all the time.
Wow.
But yeah, I made...
Incredible.
I made in high school my four best friends come with me to Springfield, Missouri, which was like a few hours away to go to their concert. Mm-hmm. And they all obliged. And I like made us t-shirts with their faces on it. I was like into it. I feel like I was kind of, I guess, the one in the group that was doing that. That was like, we're going to go do this crazy thing.
Okay.
I want to do this. And you guys are coming with me.
Right,
like... I want to dress as a hobbit for Halloween to school. You guys are also doing this. And they were just like, all right.
Yeah.
So
you were the activity friend.
Yeah, I'm lucky that I had friends that were kind enough to humor me in all of my desires.
It really, like, I mean, Christian kids, not before nor since has Christian rock known how to get into the zeitgeist. Jeremy Camp could never.
I like don't even know what it is now. I feel like right, like that time was such a specific time of like great Christian music. And of course it was always like with Sixpence None the Richer, Kiss Me, an amazing song. And then of course the whole Christian community was like, well, this is a song about kissing. Like, uh-oh. Are they really, can they be a Christian band? And it's like, oh my God, calm down, everybody. So ridiculous.
Oh my God, we're going to live in this kind of topic because while I'm watching this and it's 2002 there, I graduated high school 2003. It sounds like you're circa that general time period. Tell me about your experience, because we're going through the great 2000s reappraisal right now, as millennials are the new historians.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Right? We made it out alive somehow. How, like, looking back on the 2000s, what do you think of that time as, like, shit, I was in my formative years then?
Well, I totally agree with you. But again, I feel like I had such a weird sheltered experience because I was just in my own little circle listening to Reliant K. And I mean, even as like a younger child, I only was allowed to watch PBS. Like I didn't watch Nickelodeon. Okay. Yeah, it was like PBS and Disney movies and that was it. So, I mean, and could talk for a while about like then eventually coming to Los Angeles for college and being like, oh, the world. Because I just, was kind of in a bubble, I feel like, growing up in Arkansas. I mean, we would go to school dances and I would dance to NSYNC. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Don't get me wrong.
Yes.
But yeah, some of the bigger cultural aspects, I feel like, were kind of went over my head.
Now, so then you, if you, you know, coming out, you, college, that was, you, you, came, mm-hmm. you went to college out here in LA.
Yeah, I went to USC, yeah.
So, fight on. And
yeah, fight on.
I went to University of Oregon. I am a rare USC, surrogate USC fan. I feel like there's like five of us.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. I feel like most people hate us, so thank you.
But what then was kind of your Lady Bird experience of exiting this bubble? And kind of like, even if, you know, maybe it's not something you felt or maybe it's something you enumerated, but the idea of like, I just want to live through something. Like, you leave Arkansas and suddenly you're like in this place where there's so much to live through all around you. What was that exit out of the bubble like?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I feel like there's not like necessarily one specific moment. Right. I feel like I got really lucky in like the friends that I found. Mm. Again, I was doing theater at USC and I feel like, even though I look back on myself as like a freshman at USC and I'm like cringing because I was like, so I just was like, you know, a little more outward with my Jesus talk than I probably would have.
So you really carried that with you into like that. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, it was such a new experience to meet people from all over the country. I mean, like, I barely knew anybody who was Jewish in Arkansas. You know what I mean?
There was Jewish student in Canby High School.
Yeah,
and she was the only reason any of us knew what a bat mitzvah was.
Yeah, exactly. One. Like, it's very, very similar. Like, I had no idea. And so, obviously, it was going to school with a ton of Jewish people then at USC and, like, people of all different, like, races and religions that I had never met before.
Never.
And so, it was just such a, I mean, I'm very thankful that, like, as opposed to just like moving to LA and not sort of having this 4-year incubation period to like figure out who I was and what was going on. It was great. I do remember the first time I said fuck, which was on the final day of my freshman year.
Wow, what a capper.
I know. Are you proud of me that I made it so far in life without saying that?
Honestly, yeah.
Because my parents truly view cursing as like the worst of all. I think I got into a fight with my mother once. I hope she doesn't listen to this. Over whether it was worse to say fuck or to murder someone. So
that rose to the level of debate.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, so anyway, there's a little more insight into my relationship with my mom. But yes, so it was like the very last day of freshman year, and I had packed up all my stuff and like was ready to like fly away. And then I look under the bed and I had left like a box of something under the bed, and I went, oh, fuck. And I was like, oh, I've done it.
That had been building up inside you that entire year.
Yeah, it really had.
It was only waiting for space and opportunity to come tumbling out of your mouth.
Yeah. Wow. So, you know, that was my slow and gradual descent into whatever. And then I did study abroad my junior year in London and got my heart so absolutely broken.
Yeah.
And that was a little more of my, I guess, like that sort of like I went a little cuckoo because I was so sad and in a different place and was making bad decisions.
You're
and
2 years out of saying fuck at this point. Anything could have been possible.
Anything could have
killed someone.
Could have.
Honestly, might as well have.
I don't think I did. But anyway, yeah, that's so I feel like maybe a lot of people go through this sort of in high school. I was a little bit of a late bloomer in terms of like I didn't really have my rebellious like whatever, I'm out on my own phase until later in college. But yeah, I did it and I got it out of my system. So there you go.
Well, okay, then from a professional's standpoint, tell me about like, because I got to do a Q&A with Greta Gerwig for, I moderated a Q&A for Little Women. And it was her, and it was Amy Pascal, and it was Alexandra Desplat, and her set deck, and I think her art director were there. And it was, I had gone to see a Q&A the night before that she did for the movie, or the week before she did for the movie, because it was all the A-listers. I was not moderating that one, but it was all the heavy hitters were up on that stage. And I was so taken aback in both conversations by, Greta Gerwig has a very specific way of conveying herself and talking. Like, it was like listening to her talk, it was like she would be kind of all over the map, but then she would coalesce down into one of the most like cogent and gorgeous like intellectual arguments I'd ever heard. And I was like, you are a fucking wizard. Like, I am just eating out of the palm of your hand, and in no way have you like brought me to submission with your idea. You have charmed me and dazzled me with your wit and intellect. And I was so, and I wanted to hear from you as an actor, as a creator, sort of like how does this person sort of sit in where you intake things? I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to get at, and I'm hoping like we can guide each other to a point here.
Yeah. I mean, I love her, and I haven't like, I'm not like a Greta Gerwig scholar. I haven't
I'm not like a stan. Like I like Frances Ha. I like the work she does. But I was just like sort of as a complete figure, I'm very, very in awe of her.
I haven't listened to a ton of interviews with her or anything. I was very excited to get to meet her when I auditioned for Lady Bird. Yeah. And I will never forget it. I remember the face that she made when I did what I was doing. She just, her jaw sort of dropped and she went, I don't know if that's like good or bad. But I absolutely, I mean, obviously, I rewatching this movie, I'm like, I think this movie is in like my top 10 favorite films. Like I really appreciate what she has done as a filmmaker. And I like Frances Ha. I had seen it with my mom before. My mom loved Frances Ha, which I think is part of why she like wanted to go see Lady Bird together. And we saw Little Women together. So
you guys are on a streak.
Yeah, we are. And as a person who creates a lot of historically and literary inspired stuff, I really appreciate. Yeah, I appreciate that she did Little Women, and I enjoy that she like. I love that she is clearly like taking the time to make these stories about women and create these great films that are about women and their relationships to each other. And I mean, I'm always going to be all for that because I feel the like, need for
same.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel the need for that pretty strongly. Yeah. In terms of like, you mentioned the Anne of Green Gables podcast I've done. I didn't really even set out to like make this project that's sort of so focused on women and like their relationships. But as I was doing it, I was like, gosh, these books are so incredible for this reason, written by a woman. And generally mainly just about like a girl growing up and her relationships to the women around her. Mm-hmm. And like, and it, I guess it's once you like realize that, then you start to think like, oh my gosh, how rare this is in mm-hmm. like classic literature mm-hmm. And also just like movies and stuff in general, mm-hmm. you know, and even now. So I really appreciate that, like, that is sort of what she has put, you know, mm-hmm. in these last few movies at the forefront of the work that she does. And I think it's great. I think she's a great filmmaker.
Oh my God. We ate all the cheese. It's okay. Lots of cheese, very inside. This one was a small one.
It was so small.
It was tiny.
It's not our fault.
What were we to do?
Fuck it. Let's just go to prom. Doesn't your mom have a dress?
Let's be honest, I've had a dress for months.
And it's purple.
It is. Mm-hmm. You're really gonna like it.
I love you, Mark.
We really, and I feel like we really grew up in a heyday of the teen movie. And mm-hmm. And you say this could be a top 10 movie for you of all time. What is it that this does uniquely that sets it apart when we have been inundated with so many coming of age, so many teen stories? And,
sure.
And inundated in the best way. Never stop giving me these stories. But what was it, do you think, that sort of like carves this one's own path and puts it in that like kind of top 10 category for you?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I don't know that I can really answer it. I think it just all the things that we've talked about of just like how well crafted it is in terms of showing like these moments in Lady Bird's relationships to those around her that mm-hmm. feel so perfectly just summed up for me, that like they automatically, just thinking about them, like really, you know, makes me emotional. I think it just is. I certainly, as an actor and as a person who is very in touch with her emotions, I love a movie based on what it makes me feel. Mm-hmm. I realize that, like, you can judge a movie on a lot of other things, on whether it's technically sound or whatever. And I'm sure there are many movies that are, you know, considered great movies because of how they are made, and like, but a movie that I love is going to be a movie that affects me. And yeah, Lady Bird, just from start to finish, it just really gets me. It's just so, so lovely and sweet and sad and relatable.
And with your, you know, with your own work, what sort of, you know, with where you're at right now, wherever that may be, what is it that in an ideal, like, I'm making, you know, the gloves are off, I have permission to do whatever I want, and I'm going to be able to make I have the money. Like, what is the feeling that you would seek to affect at this point with where you are as a creator?
Oh, that's such an interesting.
This would be, if I could draw this question out of people, that would make me so happy.
I think I have a unending need for adventure. Mm. And I think that's part of what I love so much about The Lord of the Rings is the vastness of it. Mm. And the, like, I want to go places. Mm. I want to try everything. I want to see everything. Like, there's so much in this world to do and to see and to create. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's what gets me excited. And as a creator, I don't necessarily come up with the ideas myself. Mm. I genuinely don't feel like I'm a writer. I don't feel like I'm somebody that comes up with like ideas. I think it's such a different skill, obviously, mm-hmm. than acting. And I think people who are great at it are amazing. My fiance, who is also my partner in Shipwrecked, he writes. And I love the stories that he comes up with, also with his sister. They are writing partners. Mm. Because they are vast, like they are really exciting, they mm-hmm. are really cool. And I think that is such a source of frustration for us, because we up till now, hopefully eventually we'll have bigger budgets to play with, but right. we've always been self-funded and crowdfunding, and like there's only so much you can do with a smaller budget. But like, I truly hope
Middle Earth is a little harder to capture with that. But like, exactly. Much can be done, but like, it's a scale.
Okay. Exactly. But that said, like we just watched Severance, and oh my God, it blew my mind. Like, not necessarily that you have to, like, have a huge epic sort of world to, like, go on an adventure, but, like, there's something about a specific type of world building that is so interesting and so exciting, and I think that's part of what draws me to the stuff that Sean and Sinead write, and, like, I want to make that... those worlds come to life because, like, they awaken that sense of adventure in me, and I hope that they also can do that for other people. So, yeah.
Well, I, you know, as Lady Bird hopes to live through something and experience something, I wish for you to live through that and experience that.
Thanks.
And just thank you so much for your time today, Mary Kate Wiles. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
This was such a pleasure. Thanks for hanging with me and talking early 2000s high school experiences.
I have a whole goddamn podcast about that. So, like, I will infiltrate any, I will Trojan horse into any conversation to be like, so the millennium era.
Amazing. I love
let's
it.
Talk anthropology. yes. Thank you for your time. Thank you for joining
us.
It's been great to have you on.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Thank you to Mary Kate Wiles. You can see Mary Kate's Vicky in Fairly Odd Parents, Fairly Odder, streaming in its entirety on Paramount Plus. And coming soon is Headless, a Sleepy Hollow inspired miniseries from Shipwrecked. And I don't know if you know this, but we always put links to our guests' social media accounts in our show notes. So if you want to find out what Mary-Kate is up to next, and as you should have gleaned by now, that could be so many things and anything, you should take a look at that. So she's a good person to keep track of. And now I have one quick thing before I go, which fun is like about me, sort of. And my recent trip down, wonderful finally to return to Comic-Con. Obviously, it was scuttled in person for a few years. That it's back now, we're still in a plague hot zone. It's a fairly terrifying proposition. But I've always loved Comic-Con. I was lucky enough to get to cover it when I worked at Wired, when I worked at Vulture. It had been a number of years since I had been able to be there in person. I didn't know when I would get to go in person again, even pandemic notwithstanding. So it was wonderful to be back down in San Diego on the con floor. And this time I got to moderate the Bold Voices in Contemporary Horror panel. And it was sincerely just a phenomenal lineup of people. Sam Weinman, friend of the show, filmmaker and friend of the show, was part of the panel. Akela Cooper, screenwriter of Malignant and other Warner Brothers horror properties. In addition to many more things, she is out here being prolific. Robin Jones, head of TV development at Blumhouse. Chloe Okuno, watcher, filmmaker. And Helena, I'm going to get her name wrong because I tried to say it to her and she was just like, just call me Helena. So you know what? I'm just going to call her Helena by her own request. The director of Bodies, a movie that you guys should know by now that I love. It was a real murderer's row. Like, it was phenomenal to be standing up there talking about Bold Voices in Contemporary Horror with a handful of people who are sincerely making some of my favorite things that I have witnessed recently in the genre. And it was great to hear a group of people affirm the conversations that I have with my friends, filmmaking and otherwise, off mic, offline, just in our private personal conversations about wanting to leave this industry better than we found it. And, you know, what are the ways that we can bring horror to a place of further progress, of further intersectional interest, while also, like, figuring out the ways to reincorporate elements of, you know, the sort of most fun, salacious aspects of genre, pulp movies, B movies, exploitation movies, things that classically ride the line between decency and indecency, not just in their content, but perhaps in the way they were made too. Like, how do we take the elements of horror of yore, sort of that fun cruelty, that subversiveness, that transgressiveness that can at times feel a bit scarce because we are figuring out how to reconcile the language and the conscientiousness of the present with the fact of horror as a genre that is meant to press, that is meant to provoke. How do we truly subvert, and how do we truly provoke thought without simply being shock for the sake of shock? You know, like, it's easy to sit there and be like, hey, Rob Zombie is a lot of people's thing, and not necessarily mine. I don't hold anything against the guy. But, like, you know, there's, at a certain point, the Three from Hell, House of a Thousand Corpses aesthetic. It's like, are we really pushing an envelope here? Or are we just, like, throwing gore at you to an extent that it becomes kind of obscene, and being like, isn't that boundary pushing? It's like, not really. It's just kind of startling me. It's just kind of making me upset. And that's great too. That is valid and has its place. But what are the ways that we can truly shock people with the points of view through which we tell stories of horror in ways and from people that have not been previously allowed to access filmmaking at a blockbuster level consistently? You know, there are the token exceptions from any demographic that get to break through and have their moment, and then studios race to fill in people who look like them or live like them and be like, ah, now you have been minted as a successor to do exactly what the pioneer before you just did. It's like Jordan Peele coming out with Get Out, and then studios looking for their own Get Out. And it's like, why are you looking for the next Get Out? Look for the first Nanny. You know, look for the first of its kind of something, instead of trying to chase around the carbon copy of a carbon copy of something that has already come to the fore and changed the world. Have the respect for that filmmaker to know that they are one of one, and then have the respect for filmmakers around them and who are coming after them to know that they too are unique, and they too have the potential to change the world if you just let them be honest and creative. So yeah, it was a panel that really emphasized honesty and storytelling, and that being the most groundbreaking thing you can bring with you as an artist. You know, how can you satisfy your mission to yourself and your art? You know, most of the time, even if it's really hard, you tell the truth. What is the most daring thing you can do? Tell the truth. What is the most daring thing you can be? Be honest. And that was really, anytime I get to hear filmmakers talk like that, it's just really enlivening. And the crowd in the room was great, because Comic-Con crowds are there to have fun, and that is the fucking best. It was great, and I hope that I can continue to have those kinds of conversations with some of those same people on this very podcast. As far as I'm concerned, Chloe Okuno is welcome back at any time. Kayla Cooper, I'm sure you're listening out there. Please do join us on the pod. But yeah, that's my one quick thing before I go. My day of exhilarating, inspiring conversation with genre filmmakers just behind me in the rear view. I hope you too are feeling inspired and enlivened just like I am. And that... Let's go out on that note. That is our show. You can follow us on Twitter at FeelingScenePod, or you can send us an email at feelingscene@maximumfun.org. If you want to follow me, I'm JorCrew on Twitter. Our theme music is by Andrew Eben. The show is produced by Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producers are Kevin Ferguson and Laura Swisher, and this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.